It's all fun and games in Strataland this week. Well, maybe not exactly fun and games, but the government is maybe going to give us low cost or low interest or even no interest loans to fix defects. And they've let us have a look at the new short-term letting regulations and the code of conduct. That's very interesting. And finally, what do you do when you see strangers having sex in your spa pool? I'm Jimmy Thompson. I edit the Flat Chat website and write the Flat Chat column every weekend in the Financial Review.
And I'm Sue Williams, property journalist and travel writer and author.
And this is the Flat Chat Wrap. So, the building commissioner says that people with defects should get low or no interest loans. What do you reckon, Sue?
Well, it's kind of interesting, isn't it, that they're stepping up finally to this. I mean, the Victorian government originally suggested low interest loans, didn't they, for people affected in Victoria with defects.
With the cladding,
that was with the cladding, yep. And now it seems that it's an idea that's taking off around the country now.
Hopefully. Well, yeah. Well, you know, there's an article on the Flat Chat website that talks about the Victorian situation. Originally, they were going to offer low interest loans through council rates, but that required councils getting involved, and none of them did, basically. So that just fell by the wayside, just never happened.
Oh, so nobody got out any loans at all?
No, as far as I know. And then the Premier of Victoria said they were going to give them money, and they had $600 million that they were going to give. But owners in apartments in Victoria have said, well, yeah, for a start, $150 million that you said you were going to give was going to come from the federal government, and they've said no. And about $200 million has already been allocated to government buildings. So that $600 million suddenly is only $150 million. And the figures that are being quoted for rectification, it's something like a billion. So it's not even going to come close. It feels like a gesture rather than a solution.
So, but is this scheme any better then, really, when the government...
Well, there isn't a scheme yet in New South Wales. The building commissioner was at the state government inquiry last week, and he said that he thought, this is the new guy, David Chandler, he thought the government should offer low interest or no interest loans, which must be paid back for defect rectification.
Okay, and what do you think about that?
I think it's a swizz.
I
know a lot of people are saying, well, why are we giving ratepayers or taxpayers money to people who made a mistake, made a bad choice when they bought apartments? My view is, look, we were all told it was going to be fantastic and terrific, and we all paid our stamp duty, and we all paid our taxes on these things, and we helped to encourage the industry, which means it just generates revenue for the state, which is why the state is so keen to have all this building going on.
To stimulate the economy, employment, that kind of thing.
All that stuff. And that all puts revenue back into the state coffers, with which they build roads and railways and football stadiums. And I'm thinking, you know, we did our part and there was no consumer protection. That's the problem. There's no consumer protection for these people that have been left high and dry. And I think we should be saying to the government, well, come on, we did our part. We trusted you. You let us down. Pay up.
So when people have got defects and they can prove the quantity of those defects and how much they're going to cost to rectify, they should actually apply to government for a free grant, and the government should actually bestow upon them the money to get them the defects fixed.
When I am made Premier of New South Wales, that's exactly what will happen. But before that, I think it's unlikely. But I'm hearing rumblings already. You know, there's news reports about the offer of the low-cost or no-cost loans. And there are already people saying, well, this is taxpayer money.
So if it was free grants, presumably all those people in houses would say, well, why am I actually paying for apartment dwellers?
And all the apartment dwellers are saying, well, why are we paying for the motorways and the trains that take you to work and back? You know, it's a collective responsibility. We're either a society, we're a community, or we're not.
Mm.
And we can't just say, well, tough, you believed all the nonsense that we were spreading about how great it was to live in apartments, and you went and bought an apartment, but that's your tough luck. And no, you can't have your stamp duty back.
Right. Well, look, I think that sounds eminently sensible to give people money to get their buildings fixed, because surely that's in everyone's interest really long term, because those people who are going to be otherwise going to be, you know, in court for years and years and years, they're going to have their defects sorted out. It's going to give the construction industry jobs.
Yeah.
It's going to give people much more confidence in the building industry generally to build more apartments and to actually buy them, because I think people are looking at them now and thinking, gosh, I don't want to buy an apartment because I don't know what's inside the walls. Mm. I don't know what's happening with the ceilings, where they're going to fall down in a month or two. So maybe that's not such a bad idea, really.
Well, it's interesting. The last time I was on the James Valentine radio show, Afternoons on 702, he played a track from a builder who called up and said all his work now is doing defect rectifications.
Mm.
And he got into the building trade because he loves building things. And now he finds all he's doing is fixing things that somebody else built badly. And he's making a lot of money, but not getting any job satisfaction. But it just shows you that there's so much of this work out there needing to be done, with or without free money from the government.
Absolutely. But, you know, there's been all this publicity about the inverse curve that's coming up, which means that we might be teetering towards a recession, a world
yes.
recession. And the only way to get out of that really is to spend, spend, spend.
Yes.
So maybe this is a good time for the government to be spending on bricks and mortar, really.
What, like Kevin did with...
Yeah,
with...
yeah, to get us out of, to avoid the slump then.
But then whoever does it will get blamed the first time a tradie gets hurt on building defects, like Kevin did with his ceiling insulation, which was a great idea.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess the scheme just wasn't looked after well enough. But this time, I mean, we know what the problems could be. So maybe we should just get on with it, really.
Maybe we should turn everybody into building inspectors, so they can inspect the work that's being done.
Well, it just would give a lot more people confidence about apartments. And I think apartments are wonderful places to live in. They're just fantastic. They're so convenient. They're so stress-free. And many more people would live in them if they had confidence about the building standards.
Yeah.
And I think that would really help. And it would stop the cities becoming ever bigger, because we'd be going up instead of out all the time.
Yeah.
And I think it would be long term to everyone's benefit. So I'd vote for you as Premier with that scheme.
Thank
Jimmy.
You. Mm. Yes. Well, when Britain comes out of Europe, then there'd be no point in having dual citizenship. So, because you have to do that. You can't stand for Parliament as a dual citizen.
Oh, okay. Because you've got British citizenship as Australian.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm. Mm. Well, you can renounce that.
Yeah. Yeah. Happily. The problem with spending all that money, of course, is that the building industry would immediately start hiking up the prices, because that's human nature among builders. To be serious, something has to be done. They're talking about tightening up building codes, and actually not so much changing the building codes as getting people to observe them and getting certifiers to actually check stuff rather than just tick boxes. By the time you hear this podcast, there will have been an episode of Four Corners on ABC, which you can still catch on iView, where they're talking about the whole thing. And one of the researchers who's done a lot of research for the government on building defects, they asked her, would you buy an apartment? Would you buy a new apartment?
And what did she say?
I wouldn't buy a brand new apartment.
Mm.
No, she said, I would not buy a new apartment that's been built in the past 20 years.
20 years? That's a long time.
But the significance of that is 1998 is when New South Wales introduced self-certification. And from that point on, buildings that had been properly checked by local council certifiers were suddenly being checked by the developer's own choice of certifiers.
Right.
And that's why... But anything built in the last 20 years, they're not all defective, but you would want to double check before you bought. The other big news this week is we've had the first look at the new short-term holiday letting regulations for New South Wales. There's a discussion document out, and it makes some pretty interesting reading.
What kind of propositions are they putting forward?
The main three things in it are a register of short-term letting properties, a code of conduct, a mandatory code of conduct, and fire regulations for holiday let properties.
Okay, so a registry for short-term lettings. So who would run that registry?
Well, here's the fly in the ointment. The government is suggesting the best people to run it are the short-term letting industry people, which has been described to me as putting Dracula in charge of the blood bank.
Right. So they would be suggesting to all the people kind of doing Airbnb, for instance, that they have to register themselves. And if people don't register, are there any penalties?
Yeah, actually, there's very substantial penalties. It's a mandatory register. If you're not on the register, you shouldn't be listed on, you know, the holiday letting websites. Yeah, like Airbnb and Stays and people like that. And Stays have come out very quickly and said they love the idea. They think it's a great idea. Airbnb, I haven't heard yet what they think. They're traditionally against registers because they can have a devastating effect on their listings. I mean, last year, Japan introduced a register for Airbnb and all holiday letting, and the listings dropped by 80%.
Wow, that's a huge number.
Now, they're starting to come back, from what I read, but people had to go to their local council offices, say, I'm putting my apartment on holiday letting website. Can I have a serial number? And Airbnb and the other providers had said they wouldn't list anything that didn't have a serial number. So it may have been a case of people not taking it seriously, or I'm sure there's a lot of people who weren't allowed to let their properties in their buildings. And I'm sure a lot of people had been doing it and hadn't been paying tax.
Oh, so they were kind of doing it quietly under the counter, really.
Yeah.
And then suddenly when they had to come out into the light and actually get a serial number and register their home,
yeah,
that was the cutoff point.
Yeah, and a lot of them may have found ways around that. I do think a lot of them just never got around to it and then were shocked to find that their listings were no longer appearing on the website because, you know, the online agencies like Airbnb did the right thing. They were told if you don't have a serial number, you can't list the property.
Okay, so are people like Airbnb in favour of this? You said Stays are in favour, but...
Well, I'm trying to get a hold of Airbnb as we speak. The emails are out there, but I suspect that they will be because things are changing in the holiday let market. Everybody's got the Airbnb thing and the Stays thing where you just take a couple of pictures of your property and stick it online and see what happens. But now there's all these little niche websites coming up. I think there's one for the gay community, you know, especially, which should make sense. And these little websites aren't as obvious as Airbnb and Stays. So I'm sure there are people in both of those organizations who are thinking, we didn't want to be registered before, but we want to be registered now because we want all these other people to have to register. And they're really flying under the radar.
Mm. So if I wanted to put my home on a short-term lease website and I didn't want to have it registered, I'd just go on to one of the little quiet ones, like one that is for homes with pets and things like that,
yeah.
A specialist one. Okay, so now the big players in the market want to mop up those other ones. They
want
to make
sure
they don't have a disadvantage, you know, compared to those.
It's interesting that the proposal suggests that the registry shouldn't be available to the public because of privacy issues, but it should be available to local councils, government, the industry.
So that means owners' corporations?
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're an owners' corporation, you can check which ones are in your building?
Well, that's hinted at as being a possibility at the moment. So I think the Owners Corporation Network and people like that are going to have to get in there and say, no, this is essential. We need to be able to check if there are short-term lets in our building and if those short-term lets are properly registered. Now, the other thing is the code of conduct, which it's basically sensible stuff, but you wonder how it's going to actually be worked, because if you make a complaint, and it has to be through fair trading, which is a worry in itself, but you make a complaint through fair trading and the respondent has 14 days to respond, but then the commissioner or whoever the commissioner is appointed to look after this looks at the evidence and decides, should they get a warning? Should they get an order to stop doing what they're doing? Should they have a strike recorded against them? And a strike can be recorded against an owner, a property, or a guest.
And is that three strikes and they're out?
Two.
Oh, two. Okay.
Then two strikes in 2 years means, and it's according to the proposal, it's a mandatory ban of 5 years, either for the guest, the host, or the property, or the host and the property. So obviously, because people could switch things around by changing the name on the lease and all the rest of it.
Oh, and that would be run by fair trading?
Yeah, that's the worrying part, really. Well, they've been shown to be very pro short-term letting in the past, like giving out information that you couldn't, erroneous information, I have to say, that you couldn't have a bylaw banning Airbnb in your building. You'll not find that on their website anymore. But people were phoning up and saying, my building's put a bylaw banning short-term letting. And they were telling people, no, that's illegal, they can't do it, which was wrong. Totally wrong. And you wonder why they were so enthusiastically supporting short-term letting. And the reason is because the government of the day were enthusiastically supporting it until they realised it was deeply unpopular
in
certain quarters.
Yeah. And the third strand to these changes that are being discussed is kind of very interesting, the fire regulations.
Fire regulations are... I don't know how expensive this is going to be for people. I think it's going to put a lot of tentative short-term letting hosts completely off the market. Because let's just take apartments, because that's what we're talking about. In an apartment, you've got to have a smoke alarm in every bedroom. You've got to have a smoke alarm just for our listeners, Sue is now looking around to see if there's smoke alarms in this room. And there isn't. You've got to have a smoke alarm in every bedroom. You've got to have a smoke alarm in the corridors leading to the bedroom. You've got to have a heat sensor in your kitchen. You've got to have all of those things wired together. And you have to have a sign on the back of the door telling people how to get out of that room and how to get out of that apartment.
Like a hotel
building,
has.
Like a hotel. Fire emergency map, which would be quite expensive to produce.
Really?
Well, if you're producing 200 maps for a hotel, you get one drawn and you replicate it 200 times. But if you're producing a map for each room in an individual apartment...
Wow, I never thought of that. So that could be quite a significant expense. But as well, I mean, I live in quite a new apartment building. I don't have smoke detectors in every bedroom.
No.
I have a smoke alarm in a hallway, but certainly...
And you don't have a heat detector in your kitchen either.
No. So that could be really expensive to install.
Well, especially when they have to be integrated. And there also has to be emergency lighting.
Like on a plane.
Yeah. Or I was thinking in a proper bed and breakfast.
Oh, I see.
Or a hotel.
I was thinking of someone standing there saying, just follow these lights to the exit.
So you go to your Airbnb and there's somebody standing there saying the exits are here and here.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. I suppose it's a bit stupid.
And then, you know, in the event of smoke, oxygen masks will drop from the ceiling.
Yeah. So I guess that could be so expensive it could put people off actually doing Airbnb, because presumably that would be quite easy to check on, because always in apartments, every year you have fire regulation.
Yep.
People come round and actually check that your fire alarms are working and functioning and everything's going okay.
Yep.
So those people have the right to come into your apartment, don't they?
Yes.
It's not like an owner's corporation that would say, can we come in and have a look and see how many beds you have in this bedroom? They're not allowed to do that, obviously. But fire inspectors...
Well, fire inspectors, it's difficult. Fire inspectors can demand entry to an apartment in a building. And the people who are supposed to provide that entry are the owner's corporation. The owner's corporation has to get orders before they can enter a flat without the owner's permission. So what you've got massive fines. If the owner's corporation doesn't have its fire safety checks done, there's massive fines for each apartment that they fail to let the fire inspectors into. But if the owner of the apartment has said, no, you can't come in, then the owner's corporation is absolved of all responsibility and the fire inspectors can then get orders to go into that apartment. So there's obviously a delay there, but at some point fire inspectors can say, we're coming in. Mm. We've got the orders from NCAT or whatever. We're coming in. We're going to check your apartment. And that's when we're talking about the code of conduct. That's when the big fines come in. I think the biggest fine is for a corporation. So that's a business that's running a lot of rentals, is 1.1 million.
Wow.
According to my calculations, which I have to say are dubious, but it depends on which level of court you take them to. But if you end up in the Supreme Court on a case, that's where the really big fines come in. So they're obviously aware of the fact that a lot of these short-term rentals are now being run by companies.
Okay. So these are really interesting times in short-term rentals. I mean, it was a long time, nothing was happening whatsoever, and it seemed to be just a free-for-all. But now it seems that people are really quite determined to see change, and they're throwing up these quite interesting strategies to try and manage
the sector.
Quite
clever, a lot of it.
Mm.
I mean, we tend to be negative because we don't trust anybody in either government or the building industry. But there's a lot of smart ideas coming through in this, and they will be tweaked.
Mm.
I think a feeling that the short-term letting industry has a bit too much say in all this. And I think they'll be looking at the fire regulations, because those fire regulations, on the face of it, they're basically saying, OK, you can call yourself Stays or Airbnb or whatever, whatever you want, call yourself that. But at the end of the day, you are basically a bed and breakfast. And there are people out there who've had bed and breakfasts for decades who have had to have this level of fire safety. Because you've got people staying there who don't understand the layout of the apartment, they don't understand how everything works, you have to be extra careful, more than in our apartments where it's a couple of smoke alarms in the hallway.
Yeah. Well, it certainly sounds as if something is going to happen, whatever comes out of this.
Yeah,
there will
I think,
be some
and
measures.
I think it's going to be mostly good.
Great. That's good to hear, some good news.
Yeah. And we're back. And Sue, you've got this week's funny story.
Well, yes, a friend of mine was, she had a call from a neighbour the other day, and the neighbour said, can you see the spa from your apartment?
Is this a communal spa?
Yes, a communal shared spa. There's a pool there, and in kind of like a courtyard in the middle of the complex,
right,
and also a spa. And so my friend said, oh, yeah, I'll just have a look. So she looked out, and there was a couple having sex in the spa.
Oh, my God.
So her neighbour said, look, we've got to go and stop them. This isn't right. There are kids around, you know, we shouldn't be allowing this kind of thing. So the two of them strode to the spa, and the couple were there naked and in the middle in flagrante.
In full flagrante delicto.
Yes, that's right. And so they coughed. And I think they were kind of ignored. And then they said, excuse me, I'm afraid you can't do this kind of thing in our spa. So the couple stopped and they realized, they saw them, you know, they was absolutely naked. And they said, you're going to have to get out of the spa now. So they turned their backs so the couple could get out and put their towels around them. And then they asked them who they were. And they discovered that even worse, they were tenants who used to live there over a year ago, but they still had the keys and the access to the building. To the common property areas of the building, and so had been sneaking in regularly to use the spa and possibly to have sex in the spa. Who knows?
Well,
but yeah,
if you're going to have sex in a spa, have it in someone else's.
Yes,
that's
right.
Rule. Let them deal with the consequences.
Yeah. So yeah, it created a real problem for the building because they suddenly realised they needed to have a much better key security system in place.
Yep.
Because you know, who knows how many other tenants were using the spa and the pool who weren't meant to be there either. And that's a terrible security issue, really.
Well, that's the reason a lot of buildings are moving, first of all, to the electronic fob security, because you can cancel an electronic fob. You can't do that with a metal key. And now some of them are moving even further. They're going into fingerprint recognition and
iris.
And which works on my new laptop, I have to say. I just look at the screen and it says, "Hello, Jimmy."
Fantastic. And I always remember those films where people scrape off people's fingertips and then use the skin to try and get access.
Cut off their fingers.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. I suppose people won't normally do that just to use a spa, but that would be going a bit far.
I don't know. If you're desperate enough to have sex in someone else's spa. I wonder what bylaws that would come under. Being properly clothed on common property would be a start.
Offending public decency, ruining other people's common enjoyment of public spaces. And
how far did your friend have to lean over the balcony railing before she could see the spa? That's where the real danger in this lay. People falling off balconies trying to get a look. Well, that's been great, Sue. That's very entertaining. It's all over so quickly. Thank you so much for coming in again. You've been away and now you're back, and you're back in the flat chat rap way of thinking.
Well, yeah, because I actually went to the Borkans, and it was really interesting because there you've got some of the most beautiful, fabulous apartment buildings, you know, the great Art Deco buildings, really glamorous, because obviously people in Europe were living in apartments way before us, and they kind of took huge pride in it. And then you've got all these massive buildings which were built by the Russians after the Second World War, when the Russians came in and liberated a number of these countries from the Nazis, but then actually imposed their own communist regime. And these buildings were all, you know, real brutalist architecture. They're really ugly buildings. And they're kind of known colloquially by the locals as commie condos. But they're kind of cheap and they're still there and they're standing up and they actually look a bit worse for wear, but they're probably not falling down like some of our buildings. So it was really interesting seeing this amazing array of buildings all over the Balkans, you know.
Yeah, because some of the older buildings are just stunning, aren't they?
Budapest, in Hungary, just incredible. You know, you kind of think, oh, is that a church? Is that a monastery? Oh, no, it's an apartment building.
Right.
And some of the most expensive housing in Budapest is actually penthouses of apartments, much more than individual houses.
Right.
Mm. So it was a fascinating study of apartments overseas. So I should put it on my tax, I think.
I think, let's hope nobody from the tax department's listening. But it is sad, isn't it? We travel overseas and we find ourselves taking photographs of the most mundane looking buildings. I mean, I as you know, I go to Vietnam quite often, and it always amazes me. You see these apartment blocks with advertising hoardings over the windows. Like, they've rented the apartments out to people. They haven't said to them, oh, by the way, your window will be blocked by a poster advertising cigarettes or something like that.
But, yeah, one of my favourite photos, though, was from Fiji when I found a yacht. And I think I sent you a copy of the photo. And the yacht was called the Flat Chat.
Right.
And I thought, He's got a yacht. This business is so lucrative. He's now actually got homes overseas and a yacht to visit them in.
We've got our own yacht. Talking about brutalist architecture, the Sirius, what's happening with that? I know it's empty now, so it's not getting pulled down. It's a work of art. Apparently a lot of Russians want to move in. They think it looks really nice. And a final word on the keys just occurred to me. One of the offences under the code of conduct is hanging on to your keys for your short-term let apartment.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's something that they can come out. You'll get a strike against your name for that, I'm sure. All right, Sue, thank you so much again. Thank you so much for coming in. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Fantastic. Thanks, Jimmy.
Thanks again to Sue Williams for coming in and talking to us. You can make a contribution and make your thoughts known about the proposed short-term holiday letting regulations by going to the government's website. That's at planning.nsw.gov.au/STRA. So that's the usual W's at the beginning, then planning.nsw.gov.au/STRA. That's where you can make your own submissions, but also that you'll find a link there under Planning Portal where you will be taken to all the different pieces of legislation and an overview that you can read and summarising the proposals. If you enjoy these podcasts, please subscribe through whatever service you get them and they'll arrive automatically on whatever device you listen to them on. You can do this through iTunes or Stitcher or Castbox, which is my favourite. There's a lot of options. It's on the website. If you're looking for specific advice on matters related to apartments, come to flat-chat.com.au. Or you could read my column every weekend in the Australian Financial Review. Anyway, I hope you enjoy it. It's all free. Thanks for listening. Talk to you again soon.